Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and if you happen to be a national security journalist, this is quite a moment. Let's call it the summer of stress. Of course, there are the continuing revelations about surveillance, the drip, drip, drip of information coming from the documents that Edward Snowden spirited away from his NSA job. And then there's the pressure that government seemed to be applying to journalists. Just yesterday, Guardian columnist Glenn Greenwald's partner was detained for 9 hours by British authorities and questioned about his role in the Snowden leak, which Greenwald had written up. And one more thing to stress you out, the possibility that your fellow journalist may not have your back. Did you catch the tweet by Times' Michael Grunwald over the weekend that said, "I can't wait to write a defense of the drone strike that takes out Julian Assange," unquote. He quickly deleted it and issued an apology. It's unclear what the fallout of those 140 characters might be. But let's talk about this with one of our favorite political watchers, Amy Davidson of The New Yorker, who's been writing about Snowden, Grunwald, Greenwald, and more on her Close Read blog. Hi, Amy. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
And let's start with the news of the weekend, which was kind of furiously being disseminated yesterday, so people may have missed it on a Sunday. David Miranda was passing through London en route from Berlin to Rio de Janeiro, where he lives and sometimes works, with Glenn Greenwald, his partner. He was detained for 9 hours by British police. Is this a sign that authorities are putting together a plan to bring charges around the Edward Snowden leak, possibly against Greenwald?
You know, it's pretty shocking. He was not only held for 9 hours, but he was held under Britain's Terrorism Act, which, you know, it's sort of this moment where we're seeing this strange conflation of leak investigations and terror and espionage investigations. Because I don't think that there's any measure in which anybody can really credibly with a straight face say that they thought that David Miranda was really involved in terrorism or had any connection to it.
I guess it depends on what this Terrorism Act actually says. We see that he was held under what they call Schedule 7 of the Terrorism Act of 2000, which has a stop, search, and question provision for ports, airports, and border areas. And I think defenders of this stop are saying that it didn't mean that they suspected him of being a terrorist, but if he had some kind of classified documents or information about classified documents that related to Britain's national security, then they had cause under the law.
Well, I mean, I read the section last night, and I think that to read it that way, you have to read it in what I really think is bad faith, because it says, basically, it does say that they don't have to give their explanations. They can just stop pretty much anyone. But it has to be for the purpose of the act, which is to prevent terrorism. Some people have talked about, well, you know, disrupting electronic communications. But that sort of gets you into a definition where you're saying that you're interfering with spying operations just by informing the public about secret things. It kind of implies that any journalist could be stopped, or that anything that's journalism that touches on classified information or things that aren't public can be thrown into this rubric of terror or espionage. And we've really seen that here, where the Espionage Act has become the default legal mechanism for going after leakers. I think it's absolutely true that the law is very broadly written, and you know, that itself is a problem. But it also does seem, and the reaction in Britain shows, that it's being used here in a way that's novel. A lot of British politicians this morning were worried that the detention of Miranda could actually undermine support for the Terrorism Act. And I think it's also telling that, you know, most of the people who are stopped under this act are 97% are held for less than an hour. They just check their identification, see who they are, let them go. He was held to the very maximum the law allows, 9 hours, without any charges or anything like that.
And I love how they come up with these metrics. 8 is fine, but 9 hours and 15 minutes would just be too intrusive.
So what's especially actually intrusive, and what I think surprised a lot of people is that they also took his computer, took his mobile phone, took his little handheld video game that he'd had on the flight.
And flash drives, I understand.
Yeah, and memory cards and DVDs. So it's, and why? Does anybody think that David Miranda is involved with terrorists? Or does anybody think that this act is being read in a very, very aggressive and really dishonest way to define what The Guardian is doing and what Glenn Greenwald is doing as something akin to espionage and terrorism?
Or maybe their kids really love that particular video game. I don't know which it is. But actually, Britain, in all seriousness, has a very different relationship to terrorism. It has a different history with terrorism, with the IRA and all of that, and a very different relationship with the media than we do in the United States, right?
Absolutely, which is why that even British politicians are saying that this is not how we expected this law to be used. And the Brazilian government also has objected to it pretty strongly, since Miranda is a Brazilian citizen. He was visiting Laura Poitras, Glenn Greenwald's co-worker on the Snowden story, and The Guardian had paid for the trip, but I don't think that anybody, as they often do, I think, with family members who are helping out with things, but I don't think anybody even would say that David Miranda is a journalist, and he's a family member of a journalist.
But if he had a role in this reporting, if he's not just Glenn Greenwald's partner, but he's processed a lot of the documents, and this trip was to meet with filmmaker Laura Poitras, who, as you say, helped Snowden with the leaked information. Maybe it's not just intimidation of Greenwald via his boyfriend. Maybe it is questioning someone who may have real information, whether that information is legitimate or not, for the government to get their hands on.
The question there is it all right to stop any journalist or any journalist's assistant or anybody in any way connected to a publication at a border for 9 hours and take all of their laptops and memory cards?
The point being, I guess, that in the UK as here, suddenly the journalists who receive leaks about classified information are almost as suspect as the leakers. New interpretations of the law.
Yeah, and the very aggressive way, very blunt laws like the Espionage Act are being used in investigations that could otherwise be covered by laws governing classified materials and different statutes.
Listeners, you want to get in on this conversation about Greenwald and Grunwald and other people with dissimilar names? 212-433 WNYC, like our guest Amy Davidson, who watches politics for The New Yorker in her Close Read blog, 212-433-9692. Here's Curtis in Manhattan. Hi, Curtis. You're on the air.
Hi, Brian. Great show, as usual.
Thank you.
I think it's very interesting that, let's not forget, that it's Great Britain that made us have a Fourth Amendment in the first place. A few years ago, we had a little rebellion against King George, and we did not like the way they searched and seized at will, and so we wrote a Fourth Amendment. Well, here they go again.
Well, now that's a really important point, because one of the things in the Fourth Amendment is, and one of the things that really bothered the founders, was an idea of general warrants that weren't specific to a person or connected to a cause, but just were kind of dragnets. It is interesting that even more than 200 years ago, they had a strong sense of what that meant in terms of government power and individual freedom, and did have strong feelings about it. And when one looks at the sort of orders and sign-offs that the NSA has had from the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act court, they do look much more like general warrants than individual warrants.
Curtis, thank you. And our kids will have another King George in Britain when they grow up, we now know, right? All right, let's move on to the other Wald. Time Magazine's Michael Grunwald tweeted late on Saturday night, after, who knows, maybe he had a few too many Diet Cokes, "I can't wait to write a defense of the drone strike that takes out Julian Assange." unquote. Now, Grunwald is known as a critic of Assange, and he's actually written intelligently about the complexity of our national security systems and our use of drones. And you certainly can question whether Assange and WikiLeaks are news organizations and journalists in any sense that, you know, the New Yorker or WNYC or The Guardian might consider ourselves. Is this just a late-night failed attempt at writing something provocative on Twitter, or do you see something more in there?
Now, I think the first thing to say is that he deleted the tweet and apologized, and he said multiple times that he was dumb, although he pushed back a little bit before that. But I think that this really resonated, and it's worth talking about. First of all, it came at the end of a day when we saw a lot of journalists under threat. If you were watching the coverage from Egypt that day, there were journalists who were being attacked, who were being assaulted, and who were being criticized by the Egyptian government with this same notion. You're complicit with terrorists if you're talking about things in a certain way. Obviously, we're not, the situation for reporters here is so much better than in Egypt, but it's interesting to see that language. And I think that that's one reason why Twitter and a lot of people online reacted so strongly to Grunwald's tweet, because it came at this moment where press freedom is really on the table and it's being discussed and it's being decided on and a lot of the boundaries are being set. And his tweet was read as taking a pretty strong position about what journalists could expect in terms of protection. And, you know, again, one of the other reasons why it didn't come across as just a provocative joke is because there's a certain plausibility to the idea of going after journalists, maybe not with a drone strike in the middle of London, which is where Assange is, but with, you know, prosecutions, with, you know, there is a way to read the administration's white papers on targeted killings, for example, and wonder if those could also be applied to journalists who are, again, defined as terrorists or defined as spies. So there are a lot of things that are in the mix right now that his tweet, in a way, really encapsulated. And it's also interesting what you said about whether there's a real resistance to defining WikiLeaks as a media organization, which I think is misguided. I don't see any meaningful way to do that. That would, you know, there's no real line. I don't see any way that you could, as Grunwald said, write a defense of this that would keep New Yorker journalists safe or New York Times journalists safe. You know, we use classified information. We use computers. I mean, the idea that WikiLeaks is unfamiliar and strange in some ways, so they're not journalists, I don't think that that works. And I think that any way that you would write it to say this only applies to WikiLeaks could easily be turned on any number of journalists. And it's really dangerous.
But is WikiLeaks really in the same category as the New Yorker or the New York Times? I mean, Julian Assange would probably say that he's out to weaken the illegitimate empire of the United States or something to that effect. He said things like that on multiple occasions. That's different than looking to get the truth out, looking to uncover government secrets that have important, you know what I mean?
There are a lot of advocacy journalists who are, you know, only print their things on papers sold on newsstands. You know, certain Fox journalists might say that they have an agenda. Nation journalists might say that they have an agenda. The idea that opinion alone makes you not a journalist is it's risky. It really is. I would even argue that the sort of more media outlet challenges the government, the more we have to be careful of protecting them, because it's. You don't really need to worry as much. You do need to worry, but you don't need to worry as much about protecting the middle of the road from the government's sort of angry response to what they do. I just don't, again, see how you can define away the problem for all journalism of that sort of attack on WikiLeaks.
So Greenwald's partner going through the airport, working with Greenwald, is not a journalist, but WikiLeaks and Julian Assange are journalists?
Well, you know, I think that David Miranda is not a professional journalist. He's involved in journalism. I think that, you know, we'll find out more. I don't know what he was doing in Berlin. I don't think any of us know what he was doing in Berlin. I'm not sure that that matters. He's certainly not, you know, there's always the question of is everybody who works in the office a journalist in the same way? He had a connection to a journalistic project, and that's why he was pulled aside. And again, I'm not sure that that is so much the issue. He was a particularly vulnerable person because he didn't have the training of a journalist. He was, you know, going through the airport. And again, I don't think that it would have been okay if Glenn Greenwald had been pulled aside that way.
We're almost out of time, but let me take one quick call. Pushing back, I think, a little bit on some of the things you've been saying. Alex in Park Slope, you're on the air. Alex, we have about 30 seconds for you.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. You know, it's time for people to wake up and smell the roses and realize that if we turn the table on journalism, why not turn the table on journalism and treat government just like another information-seeking entity? And for good or for bad, I don't think that journalists are any more than government entitled to claim the protection of the people. So what's wrong with finding dubious information? I mean, Julian Assange has hissy fits when a journalist gets into his data. And the other thing is that...
And Alex, I'm going to leave it there for time. But to his point, Amy, now clearly when we're protecting, we say we're protecting the people, we're protecting journalists, we're protecting them from government. So,
because information gathering is not the only power a government has. It's backed by powers of prosecution. They've got an army, which is something that neither the New Yorker or NPR or
Right, of course. But there would be some listeners, at least, who think, well, why should we make such a clean distinction between the leaker and the leakee? If they're cooperating in getting classified information that's not supposed to be disseminated to the public, that has national security implications, out to a public audience, what's really the moral distinction between Edward Snowden and Glenn Greenwald?
Well, you know, Edward Snowden was working for the government as a contractor, and Glenn Greenwald is working as a journalist he works for The Guardian. He also, you know, writes on Twitter and on all sorts of different places. I think that it is possible to make that distinction. Courts have been making it for a long, long time, and the public has been figuring it out for a long, long time. I think we exaggerate the challenge that, you know, suddenly having the web poses to that distinction.
Amy Davidson writes the Close Read column for The New Yorker. Amy, thank you so much.
Thanks.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, new laws from Albany that even some legislators might not have realized they were passing. How does this happen? We'll explain. Stay tuned.